Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And today is Friday, August 4th, 2017. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
I looked up. I was just curious to see if there was anything interesting that was, you know, something that happened on this date and time in the past. In 1987, the Federal Communications Commission voted 4-0 to abolish the Fairness Doctrine, which required radio and television stations to present balanced coverage of controversial issues. So that was abolished. You don't want to have, you don't want to present balanced coverage, do you?
Are you talking to me?
Yeah, they didn't want us to have balanced coverage of controversial issues. Heavens no. That's how they have fake news. And I said, you know, back in 1987, that's when they had the big market crash. And, of course, shortly thereafter is when you began to see all the financial news programs pop up. You saw this big push into Wall Street. You saw all these bull markets come across, and you've seen all these crashes cross. And I think we're pretty in tune to see another big crash coming our way soon. But interesting, and it's all conditioning of the people. That's how they split this country. Why show both sides when you have, you know, when you can just zero in on one and get the result that you want? So it's
well, it gives an opportunity for polarization. I mean, the fairness, you get rid of that. One thing about it, it is conducive to polarization. I can have a radio program where we swear up and down that Donald Trump was the best president the world's ever had, and somebody else can run another radio program and swears that Donald Trump is the Prince of Darkness. I think it's conducive to people. You know, you got one group that follows one radio program, another group that follows the other radio program. If you had to be fair about it, you had to deal with Donald Trump. So, well, you know, he's got some good spots, he's got some bad spots. If that was a way, there wouldn't be as much polarization, at least on the radio programs, and there might not be that much polarization in the body politic in this country. I have to assume that the bias in the radio programs mm-hmm. turns into bias in the public, where we don't exactly have to listen to what other people say. All we have to do is find somebody to listen to that we believe in. We agree with him or her, right? Then we can listen to them. We can just ignore what other people have to say. And maybe that's not a good thing. Maybe that fairness doctrine forced us to, or is conducive to, people actually trying to look at both sides of a situation and realize that the guy you're arguing with is not an agent of Satan. He's just, he has an opinion different than yours. I wonder what the consequences have been.
It made people think.
When we had fairness doctrine.
Absolutely.
I think it might be true.
And I think this is why today when you try to discuss something with someone, they parrot what they hear on the programs that they watch.
I agree with that.
They don't come up with
without understanding. They parrot without necessarily understanding. The same thing with, you know, the parrot doesn't necessarily know what it's saying. Hello.
So it has been a negative, and I think this is why that is. And, of course, programs like this were created. And other programs like this were created to give both sides. And that's why I do try to see both sides, but what I try to do is analyze my information. And that's why I get accused of, well, you don't like Trump. Well, no, it's not that I don't like him. It's not like I don't like his ideas and his policies. It's just I'm trying to think about why things are happening the way they are. It doesn't mean I like or dislike. It's discussion. It's supposed to make us try to understand so we know if we're getting bamboozled or not. I mean, that's why the fraud in this country is so is so great. It's because people are so easily bamboozled because, I think, because of that thinking now. Because they have been focused on to hearing just one side, and they come perhaps to trust without thinking.
Not only when we talk about bamboozling people, if you have polarized radio programs where one station or one program is absolutely in favor of one thing and the other one's absolutely opposed, insofar as we become polarized, we don't really mind if our favorite candidate is a crook. We're for our candidate no matter what. Our side, you know, hooray for our side, and it doesn't matter what anybody says. And the truth of the matter is we should be more open to the idea that we should be against crooks in general, regardless of whether they're our crooks or the other guy's crooks. You know? It's easy to sit back and point a finger at Hillary Clinton and say she's nothing but a criminal, which I think is, there's a lot of truth to that. But when you get polarized, you are disinclined to look for criminal behavior in your candidate. And what the truth is, we should be a people who are just as eager to condemn our own candidates for being crooks as we are to condemn our opponents for being crooks. And I think the polarization, contrary to that principle.
But so I thought that was kind of interesting. And beginning in 1987, you can just see, you know, how we have moved along, how things have been accepted, particularly with Wall Street. Oh, yeah, when you have 24/7 of, you know, several major networks all saying the same thing, bye, 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 paper, 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 gold is no good. It's conditioning. And so anyway, that was maybe it wasn't the start of it, but I think that was a very big part of it. Let's go ahead and see what gold is doing today. And, well, you know, the U.S. created 209,000 jobs in July versus the 183 jobs expected. I said 180 yesterday. So we had some pressure on gold, down $9 at $1,260. Silver was down a couple cents, 40 cents at $16.35. Platinum was up $2 at $969. And palladium was down 7 at $870. The USDX today, of course, was stronger with that jobs report, up 0.63. And crude oil was up 47.47 at 49.50. And the paper markets, they were sluggish in the beginning after this report. I mean, they were down, up, and they could barely get going, but they managed to keep their 22,000 record for the week anyway. The Dow was up 66 points, 22,092. The NASDAQ was up 11 at 63.51. The S&P was up 11? 5, was up 11 at 63.51, 11.00. The S&P was up 5 at 24.76. 10-year yield, 2.27%, and the euro did take back some of its strong gains that we've seen of late, 1.18, down 0.81. And in that jobs report, what I thought was interesting, discouraged workers and the underemployed was unchanged at 8.6%. So we're still adding jobs, but we still have the same amount of discouraged workers and underemployed. So that means all these new jobs are all part-time and don't pay enough, and people can't, that doesn't make a very good living. So that was unchanged at 8.6%. Let's see what else. The wage number, which is closely watched, was unchanged from the previous month. Bars and restaurants provided the biggest boost for the month with 53,000 more positives. And of course, you know, with being in the midsummer and everybody's on vacation, everybody is going to the bars and restaurants. Professional and business services contributed 49,000. And of course, this was report was by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. There's a couple of things I have out before we go on. A couple of things. I'm not sure if you and I talked about the immigration bill looking for skilled
briefly.
Laborers. Bloomberg came out today and said America has a talent shortage. While 19% of small businesses planned to beef up their workforce, the biggest share in more than a decade, 35% say they were having trouble filling positions in July. Of those rejecting job applicants, 26% cited a lack of specific skills. 14% pointed to a subpar social skills, which I thought was interesting. And 10% said drug issues were to blame. So it's a little skewed from what we talked about the opioid addiction, when it was almost 50%, I believe it was, that businesses were having a problem with. People couldn't pass the drug tests. Maybe this didn't, not all businesses do drug tests, so not sure about that. Toyota and Mazda, good news, I suppose. Toyota and Mazda plan to build a $1.6 billion U.S. plant in a joint venture. They announced this today, but they don't have a location for it yet. Hasn't been picked. But it's going to have the capacity to build 300,000 vehicles annually while employing 4,000 workers. And the companies hope to open the plant in 2021. So I'm assuming with this announcement, they're just looking to make some sort of negotiations somewhere across this country to see what best deal they can get from the taxpayers.
They're fishing.
Yep. They're fishing. And so is this just image building, perhaps? 2021 is, not that far away, but so we'll see where that happens. This I thought was interesting, Al. Amazon. The new billionaire in the world, and Amazon this, Amazon that. Well, Amazon sent an email to sellers this week announcing a new policy for refunds. Merchants who ship products themselves are subject to the same rules as items shipped by Amazon. And marketplace sellers who ship products from their home, garage, or warehouse rather than using Amazon's facilities were told this week, beginning October 2nd, items they sell will be automatically authorized for return. And that means a buyer will no longer need to contact the seller before sending an item back. So the merchant doesn't even have an opportunity to communicate with the customer. Let's say the customer doesn't know how to figure out how to get to Yahoo on their computer, on their brand new computer. They send it back, and they have to be issued a refund. In addition to Amazon said that it is introducing returnless refunds. I don't know how this is going to work.
That means we can order a new computer, and if I don't like it, they refund my money, and I get to keep the computer. Is that what it means?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the change enables sellers to offer a refund without taking back an item that may be expensive to ship and hard to resell.
Well, what it is, it's going to apply especially to small items where the shipping to return it is perhaps worth most of the price of the item, which means people who manufacture and or sell small items, inexpensive items, they're going to have a lot of trouble, although it may be that they keep track of who's returning and saying, I don't want this, I'll just keep it and you send me my money back. If they keep a list of names, it may be that you're only going to be able to try that a couple of times and you're going to find out that you can't order things anymore.
Well, that happened to me. I purchased something off of Amazon and in my box was something I didn't even order. I didn't even order it. So I sent them an email. How do I return it? Never got a response. My next credit card statement, there was the credit. I still have the product. I mean, it was just something. It was less than $5 or something that they threw in there. But just think how many of those $5 that people think, well, what's this? I guess and they keep it. The people get the money too.
If you send it back, it's coming in through the front door. It's coming in through the mail. It's not. it's not going to be computerized and automated the same way it was when they sent it out. And they may have calculated that it's going to cost them $25 to put that thing back on the shelf. So it's easier to just send you $5, and they make 20. They effectively reduce their cost by $20 by letting you keep whatever it was you ordered in the first place, but you weren't satisfied with.
That's one reason why I don't sell online, because the merchant receives no support. Well, I wouldn't sell online on Amazon, but from the website, you don't receive support from the credit card companies. Yeah. You can purchase anything you want online. And if you say, I didn't authorize that, you know, the credit card companies back charge the merchant. Yep. And then we got to go out and prove who you are, you know, and if someone doesn't keep good records and everything else, you know, you have that loss, they have your product. Yep. So it's along the same lines. So that's why I don't do it. I don't want to mess with it. I want to talk to my listeners, my buyers, because I learn a lot from them also. So it's, to me, it's important to talk to my customers. And we're just about out of time. There's one more, Al.
One more.
Venezuela's money is sinking faster and intensifying political and economic crisis. And, of course, it has left the citizens destitute and increasingly desperate. I believe yesterday alone, the Bolivar slumped nearly 15% on the black market.
One day.
Mm-hmm.
You're in a year, hyperinflation then.
In a year, the currency has lost 94%.
It's moving faster. I mean, 15% in a day.
In a day.
That translates into something like 500% for the year, if I'm doing my math right, and I might not be. But they're stumbling into hyperinflation, and that means people, what that really is an expression of people losing confidence in their currency. Something I might have sold to you for $100 yesterday, today when I think about it, I won't sell for less than 120. And tomorrow I might not sell for less than 200, because I know that when you give me the 200, its value, its purchasing power is diminishing, and that means I got to move this quickly. I can't have confidence in that $200 that I'll be able to store any value in the $200 you give me. So I've got to spend it right now. It all contributes to hyperinflation.
That's not what they're doing now. They're actually hoarding. Venezuela are hoarding dollars.
Oh, dollars.
So
not bolivars. Dollars.
But they're. Let me look at this report.
Tom, let's find out if we're holding dollars or bolivars.
Correct.
Well, tell me which one.
Dollars.
Okay. We'll be back in a moment on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
But the thing of it is, they don't have anything left. Yeah. It really works.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. talkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
Well, I want to thank the listeners. I had one client call me and he says, "Well, Melody, after your rant yesterday," he says, "I thought you're absolutely correct. It's insane. 10 cents over spot for silver." And he called, and I want to thank you, and I want to thank all of you and for paying attention. It was a great deal, and I thank you. And we're still carrying on the Mint State 62 $10 Liberty Gold pieces. Man, as long as they're under the $20 level for pricing, it's the thing to be buying. And I know we might talk about today a little bit of confiscation. I'm not sure if we're going to go that route or not, but we do need to talk about confiscation because oftentimes it's, you know, it's used as a selling tool. And I think it's important to know about confiscation and how it applied, how it might apply, and whether it will or not. But that's not the reason why you buy particular types of gold or go into particular types of investments, thinking that you're protecting yourself against confiscation. With the $20 gold pieces, the mint state, the $10, there's multiple reasons why you buy those types of coins. You have profit, you have performance, and then, yes, privacy. And that privacy does, if it should happen, would protect you against that. And people were able to trade gold after the confiscation. Dealers didn't go out of business. Maybe many did.
You mean the confiscation in 1933?
Of 1933. I mean, there were business. It was difficult to do business, but as long as you traded rare coins, coins of rare and unusual value, business flowed. Many dealers were in business during that period of time. So, and I expect it to continue. However, I wouldn't expect to see 5,000 dealers across this country like we have now. I'm assuming a lot of them will go out of business if and when that type of a situation would occur. So, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. Alfred?
Yeah, if you want to talk about confiscation, there's an article written by a man named Julian D. W. Phillips at Gold Forecaster. He says, "Gold's future confiscation is a growing reality as currency confidence slides." Now, and this is a reason why people are concerned about confiscation. And so what many people do is they say, "Oh my gosh, the federal government's going to take my gold coins, and therefore I'm going to store them in Canada."
That's silly.
Maybe in Switzerland, or perhaps over in Indonesia or someplace.
Don't
Hong Kong.
Do that.
I understand. It's just foolishness. I guarantee that if our government is willing to confiscate your gold, if that ever happens,
oh,
I guarantee that every government on the face of the earth will be willing to confiscate their people's gold. And they will be particularly eager to confiscate any gold that belongs to Americans that's being stored in their country.
Yeah, because all they're going to say, "Come get it, baby." If you want to,
you know, the whole idea behind confiscation, it's scary and it's something people are concerned about. Some people are concerned about. And it's not an irrational fear. I don't think it's likely, but who can say? And they make some interesting arguments in this document about it. But the point is, government wants to take your gold. What does that tell us? It tells us that government is a bunch of crooks. They're going to come up with some cock and bull story about, well, we need the gold for, to stop the drug dealers or to stop terrorists or something. But the truth of the matter is the government will need the gold because the government's broke. And rather than admit that they're broke, the government will try to rob somebody. And I think the first on the list will be people who have currency in their pension funds. Right? Easy. Easy to steal that money, digital currency.
Going to go to zero.
Right? That's a snap. The probability that they're going to come knocking on doors looking for gold is extremely low. I don't expect that to happen. But they can do something with dealers. They can do something. They can get at you. But if they take it, you're dealing with crooks and criminals. They have no right. And it tells us about the nature of government. If they're prepared to steal your gold, then government is a bunch of thieves. What is our obligation to cooperate with a government composed of a bunch of thieves? And I don't see that there's much of an obligation there. It may be that you are obligated to, you know, try to stay clear of the police or whoever else is enforcing these government laws. But the moral right of government to seize the public's gold is just about zero.
Even if they did, they're not going to knock on your door.
No.
You will be given an amount of time, just like they did in 1933, to turn a certain amount in. And people were still allowed to keep a certain amount of gold, even though they, you know, when they confiscated in 1933, along with their rare and unusual coins, collectible coins. So, and if they did regulate, again, they're not going to knock on your door. They have to confiscate weapons first.
What happened in 1933 mostly is they simply had the banks. Anyone who deposited any gold in the banks, if gold was being used to make payments, and the banks got their hands on it, they pulled it out of circulation and sent it to the federal government. And the banks were the principal agents for removing gold from circulation.
But they did have a date. They did have a date and time in which they did have to return it over a certain amount. It just wasn't on a casual basis. If, you know, we take it, we're going to keep it from you. That was pretty much done, you know, prior to 1933. But they did have a date and time.
Well, one of the arguments in the article that I'm looking at is that the slow move toward a cashless society, and then we see the evidence of that in the European Union, we see it in Australia, we see talk about Canada, I think, here in the United States, at least, talk about it. They want to get us to a cashless society and get away from paper dollars. But what they really want is they want to put us in a world where all of our financial transactions are achieved with a piece of plastic, a credit card, a debit card. Everything's recorded, and that way government can collect extra revenue. Right now, there are a lot of cash transactions that take place in this country that are not taxed by government, not local, state, federal. They're not getting their cut. And I think the main reason they say it's to prevent drug dealing and to deal with terrorists and one thing or another like that. The real reason for a cashless society is to increase government's power over the people, because if you get crosswise with the government, they'll shut your little debit card off. Let's see how you do your shopping without debit cards and without cash. No cash, no debit card. They can rob. They can take your funds out of whatever kind of digital accounts you have. They can easily inflate the currency if that's what they want to do. It gives them enormous power, and it also increases their revenue. And that's the reason, in my opinion, why they want to move us toward a cashless society. But this article says the slow move toward a cashless society being seen in the future must extend to gold and silver. And I agree with the rationale of that. If they're going to try to give us a cashless society, if they really want to do it, they pretty much have to pull the gold and silver out of the country also, because otherwise we can barter with it. And then we don't have cashless society. We're just on our own. We're just going to do business in gold and silver. And a lot of us will do that. Now, it implies that if we're going to have a cashless society, the government has to come after, they're going to have to come after gold and silver. But are we going to really have a cashless society? Is that something we can really do in this country? I mean, what are we going to do about homeless people? Are we going to give every one of them a little debit card? And how are we going to make sure they hang on to it? How are we, will we make sure they don't lose it out in the where they're sleeping in the back alley, whatever? What are we going to do with those people? What are we going to do? I mean, cash has been a great advantage for doing business. It's something that has been it's been conducive to maybe even prosperity for many years in this country, and was particularly when it was backed by gold and silver. But I'm not convinced that we can do a cashless society, partially because we are the world reserve currency. What are we going to do when we say cashless society? What it means is, if we're going to have a cashless society starting Monday, okay, Monday, no more cash. What's that mean? It means you'd better turn in your $100 bills, your 50s, your 20s, your 10s, and your 5s. You better turn them all in between now and Monday. Well, what about the people in Mexico that are holding on to $100 bills? What about the people in Venezuela that are holding on to $100 bills? Melody was talking about it in the first segment of the program, where the Venezuelans, they gave up on the Bolivar, but they're hanging on to the paper dollar. They're trusting their wealth. They're trusting their lives to the paper dollar. There are billions of dollars worth of $100 bills scattered all over the world. And I don't see how our government can say, okay, starting Monday or a month from now or whatever, those $100 bills, you have to turn them in now, because after the first of next month, they're no longer legal tender. What are they going to do with the flood of $100 bills that presumably will come pouring back into this country to try to beat that 30-day limit or 60-day or whatever it is? What are they going to do with that? Is that going to destabilize the economy? They tried this in India in the last, I think it was just in the last 6-9 months, something like that. They tried to install a cashless society over there. That pretty much blew up in their face. They haven't given up on it, but it pretty much blew up on their face. Plus, we've got the other situation with Bitcoin and the cryptocurrencies coming on. At the same time, when the government says we have to get rid of cash, we have digital currency that's capturing the public's imagination. And if the government gets rid of all the cash, and if they get rid of all the gold and they confiscate all the silver, what's going to stop people from doing business with digital currency, cryptocurrency? And will the government's new and improved monetary system be able to compete with cryptocurrency? I think there are a lot. This is like a juggler who's called. He's juggling a couple of plates and bowls and spoons, knives, forks, and a chainsaw. And he's juggling all of these together. Well, he's got his hands full. This is not an easy thing to do. They're not going to be able to simply say, ta-da, we're shutting off all the currency starting the first of next month. That's not going to happen. They maybe have to squeeze this down a little at a time, but they won't easily be able to get rid of the cash. And what about all the vending machines in this country? How many of them take debit cards, credit cards? And I'm sure a lot of them do. But I think there's a bunch more. There are at least a significant number, I assume. I haven't done business with a vending machine. I can't remember last time I bought something out of a vending machine, but it used to be you put in 50 cents, 2 quarters, or then 4 quarters, or maybe you put in $1 bill. What are you going to do? What are they going to do with vending machines that are still functioning on the basis of cash when cash doesn't work anymore? And that's a big, that's a significant part of our economy, or it has been in the past. So a point I'm trying to make here is, before everybody gets all excited about government confiscating gold or silver, trying to, 2 points I'm trying to make. One, I don't recognize any moral obligation to surrender my gold and silver to the government. There are a bunch of, if they want it, and they say, we've passed a law, I say they are morally indistinguishable from the Bloods and the Crips. They may have the power to take it from me, but they don't have a moral right, and that does not, I don't recognize a moral obligation to surrender my investments to the government just because the government has been irresponsible, it's going broke, and it says, well, we're the government, we get to rob people. The moral obligation is not there, in my opinion. It's not going to be easily done. That's the second point. And we are collecting gold, many of us, against a worst-case scenario where things really do get difficult. And what that's going to mean is people are going to have to, you're going to have a choice between either starving to death, politely starving to death in your homes or your apartments, or standing up on your hind legs and doing whatever is required to survive. If things really go bad, Are you better off with gold or without it? I know that the government's, oh, we're going to throw you in jail and the rest of it if you got any gold. Yeah, but who's going to feed you if you don't have it? Choices will have to be made. Courage will have to be. We will have to find our courage. We will have to do whatever has to be done in order to survive. And the government understands that. And when I say do whatever has to be done, that's in a world that has a Second Amendment. That's a dangerous statement. But government understands that they can't. This is not going to be just a little cakewalk where, well, we'll take. Let's, I don't know. Let's pass a decree and everybody turn in their gold tomorrow. You know, even when they did it in 33, some people hung on to their gold. And they may have to bury it, and they may have to sit on it for a while until it was finally legalized again. And at that point in time, it was worth a great deal more than it was when they buried it in the backyard. But
it was a different time.
Choices, yeah, it's a different
it
time.
Was a
I
different
get that.
It was a different time. People, you know, they wanted to help. You know, they understood.
Then
they were able to keep $1,000 worth of their gold coins. Isn't that generous? But anyway,
$1,000 in gold coins
was a lot.
It was 50 ounces.
Yeah.
All right. Gold was at least initially, gold was still $20 an
mm-hmm.
ounce.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That's 50 ounces of gold. That's a nice little stash. All right. All I'm saying is we are facing difficult times. And anyone who thinks that there's an easy way to prepare for what might be coming, that's a mistaken thinking. There's an easy way, a civilized way, we'll all sing Kumbaya, we're all going to get along. No, probably not. We don't know how bad things are going to get or if they're going to get bad at all. But in a worst-case scenario, which is always the least likely scenario, but the worst is, you know, probably won't ever get that bad, but in the worst-case scenario, you're going to have to make choices. And the choices just to protect yourself and your family may not be consistent with obeying whatever government decrees are being passed around. So, I don't know. There's more in this article, and I'm not going to get into it right now, but they make some interesting points, but the article was part of a sales pitch, and I don't know. I'm grab onto that gold, hang on tight. Don't bother telling everybody that you're storing it in the attic, down in the basement. Grab on, hold on tight. And save your life before this gets done, especially if they're going to confiscate its evidence. They are crooks. That's even more reason to get it, hide it, squirrel it away where you can find it if you absolutely must. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two Black Berkey Elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. What's next, Melody?
Came across, this was just released later this afternoon. I think I saw one article a little bit earlier in the week. But this was a disappointed Republican donor sues the GOP for fraud. Republicans have tried how many times to repeal the Affordable Care Act? And dozens of times they've failed. And the Virginia Pilot reports Bob Hagman, he's a 70-year-old attorney from Virginia Beach, is suing the GOP for racketeering and fraud, claiming that the party made false claims when it solicited millions of dollars in campaign donations with the promise of repealing and replacing the Affordable Care Act. According to the suit filed in the U.S. District Court, the Virginia GOP alone raised $20 million from 2009 to 2016, and most of it is based on the repeal promise. I don't know how you would prove that. Since the Republican Party has yet to repeal and replace, despite holding all the major branches of government and promising to do so for nearly a decade, Hagman accused the party of massive fraud perpetrated on Republican voters and contributors, as well as some independents and Democrats. While he admitted in his complaint that the lawmakers themselves had political considerations, Hagman aimed his ire at the RNC. If the candidates don't deliver, it's incumbent on the RNC to go after the candidate and say, hey, you can't do this. And he had said that in an interview with the Pilot. Virginia's two national GOP committee members, Morton Blackwell and Cynthia Dunbar, Republican Party of Virginia, and State Party Chairman John Whitbeck, are also named in the suit.
I agree with them.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it'll never happen. He's not going to win that lawsuit. It can't happen. But the truth of the matter is there should be some kind of real accountability for politicians who make false promises. Right? They come in and say, we're going to stop. We're going to stop Obamacare. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. We're going to do something else. And what seems to happen is anything that they claim they're going to stop, they're going to balance the budget, they're going to, stop deficit financing. They promise it's going to happen, but when does it happen? It seems like people are elected from both parties, and for the most part, the beat goes on. It's the same old racket that we had, and the next administration will be, in many regards, the same kind of racketeers as we had in the previous administration. Now, I'm not saying that's happening in the Trump administration, but I'm just saying it has been politics as usual for a long time. And there should be a way of making these people who run for office be held accountable for what they promised to do. You know, if a man is saying, look, vote for, not just vote for me, but give me some money because I'm going to stop Obamacare. Okay, I can go along with that. Right? But when Obamacare comes up to a vote, don't you come to me and tell me, oh, wait, it didn't quite meet my criteria, so I'm voting against it. Obamacare comes up for a vote. You promised you took money based on the idea that you would vote against Obamacare. You vote against Obamacare. We don't want any more complications where it's, oh, wait, this is not exactly perfect. We can do perfect later. First thing you do, you vote against Obamacare. Now and next time and the time after that, and you keep voting against Obamacare until it's gone. But instead, you know, it's the Read My Lips Club. George Bush Sr., he voted no, there would be no new taxes when he ran for the White House. He was in for about 6 months before he raised taxes. He said, read my lips during the campaign, no more taxes. But once he got in the White House, 6 months or thereabouts, taxes were raised. Something's got to be done about that. And there has to be some sort of an immediate enforcement. And maybe they have to return the money. I mean, if nothing else, okay, you got to be president, but they talked about Virginia collected $20 million. All right? If you don't do what you promised to do, maybe you still get to be president, but you got to give back the $20 million. Find it. Dig it up. Right? There's got to be some measure of accountability for these people that is more immediate than what we have right now. And incidentally, the fundamental problem we have with government, and it's been my opinion for years, the fundamental problem with government is based on our political campaign contributions. As long as people can give an almost unlimited amount of money to the politicians are going to do whatever they can to get to lay hands on that money. And they will sell you out. They'll sell the public out. They want your vote, but they need the money. And that means they are really going to serve the oligarchy, the wealthy people, the wealthy institutions, wealthy individuals. The Supreme Court has declared that their political campaign contributions cannot be restricted. They are a form of free speech, free political speech, which is just crazy. They can't do it. It's contrary. It throws the whole country into the lap of people who have money to throw around. And that's a dangerous situation. And I think everybody, if you look at what's happening in this country to some degree, I think you can see that this goes back to the political campaign contribution laws. We need to have one of the things I've said on this program in the past and say it again is that if I'm running for public office, I don't have an objection taken. If somebody wants to give me $1 billion, that's fine with me. I have no problem with that. But that $1 billion and the source of the $1 billion must be reported on my political campaign website before I can cash the check. All right, I'm getting $1 billion from Ross Perot. All right, tells everybody who wants to look at the website, Ross Perot owns me. But Ross Perot lives in my district. I can't take any money, in my opinion. I shouldn't be allowed to take any money from any contributors outside of my district. I can only take money from people who are eligible to vote for me or vote against me. But the people in my district, they can give me money. I don't care how much. It doesn't bother me. But only the people in my district should be able to give candidates. If I was running for the Senate, I can get from Texas. I could take money from anybody in the state of Texas because it's a statewide office. If I'm running for governor, Texas, statewide. If I'm running for a local congressman, a local representative, only out of your district. It would guarantee that you pretty much have to represent the values of your particular district. And there was a situation I saw years ago. A woman I knew was running for a local office, and she ran against Dick Armey's son. I don't remember his name anymore, but Dick Armey's son just got out of college. Dick Armey was a first-tier congressman. And his son got out of college, and he received $25,000 in political campaign contributions from outside the state of Texas. Now, this was just a favor to his dad. That's what it was. But the money was coming from Washington, D.C. or Nebraska or who knows where it was. I don't remember. But he got $25,000. He was just a kid out of college. It can't be that way. You're going to have to take your money from the people in your district, and that means if you're living in a district where everybody or most people are involved in logging, then you have to fight for the rights of the people in that industry. And if you're in a district where the principal business in your district is making automobiles, then you have to fight for whatever goes on with automobiles. You got to represent the best interest of the people in your district. And the way it works right now is if you can attract the attention of the Republican National Committee or the Democrat National Committee, you can get money to support your candidacy from around the country. Now, who do you represent then? And you know, well, the answer is you represent whoever's giving you that money.
So, look at Michael Bloomberg. He goes around the country giving campaign contributions to
Father Christmas.
Whoever he wants it. And it's just not the Congress. He goes to the attorney generals. He goes to, you know, some of the little guys that you don't hear much about. But
look
they
at
have
George
his,
Soros.
But they have his same agenda. So
George Soros is the same thing. He thinks he can pass out, you know, pass out dollar bills as if they were monopoly money, which they are. But he's not even in this country. not a citizen of this country, so far as I know. If he is, he has dual citizenship, but it wouldn't be his only citizenship, and I don't think he's even an American citizen. He wants to meddle. He wants to throw his money around. It shouldn't be that way. You should only be able to take money from people who are eligible to vote for you, whatever your office is. If we did that, we'd have congressmen and senators who represented their local interests, and if they didn't, they'd be thrown out.
Well, if you listen to this person, Antonio Garcia Martinez, we might not have to worry about it too much longer. He says, within 30 years, as robots put half of humans out of work, society is going to collapse. He was a former Facebook executive. He quit his job. He now lives as a recluse in the wilderness because he's convinced that machines will take over the world. He worked as a project manager for the social media giant in Silicon Valley, but he became terrified by the relentless march of technology. Yep. He reckons that machines will have taken half of humanity's jobs within 30 years, sparking revolt and armed conflict. He lives in woodland north of Seattle. Let's see, he spoke to a new two-part BBC Two documentary, Secrets of Silicon Valley, which explores the growing influence of the tech hub on global development. He says, if the world really does end, there aren't going to be many places to run. And within 30 years, half of humanity won't have a job. And he said he's seen what the world will look like in 5 to 10 years. You may not believe it, but it's coming. And it's coming in the form, I don't know where this comes from, it's coming in the form of a self-driving truck that's going to run you over. So, not a good prediction from someone who worked for Facebook.
Do you believe him?
Think
he's right, or is he paranoid?
I believe to the point that technology will eliminate jobs, and yes, there is a big problem.
No doubt. Only thing I don't believe about it, he says 30 years. I've seen reports back a year, 18 months ago, they planned to knock out 80% of the jobs in the principal industrial province of China with robots. If they can knock out 80% of the jobs in China, or at least in their main industrial province, if that's viable, and they expected to do that by 2020.
He said half.
No, no.
He said within 30 years, half of humanity won't have a job.
Uh-huh.
But he has seen what the world will look like in 5 to 10 years. So he is separating the fact. He's talking about, you know, the end of society in 30 years. But in 5 to 10 years, you're going to see, you know.
I'm going to guess
very different
that within 5 to 10 years, we're going to approach that 50% mark, or we will have enormous political.
And that's exactly what upsets me about this immigration. They want skilled workers. What has Silicon Valley been crying for how many years? They need skilled workers. So it's like, who runs? Yesterday I talked about Apple owning what, $50 billion of treasuries and bonds? Number 24, the biggest holder. I mean, it's like, how much control do you think they have? A lot. So, yeah, it is scary. They are taking over. Silently.
Well, they appear to be, but...
Silently, though.
And the problem they've got, they take over, but what are they going to do with the people who don't have jobs? You know, you can do welfare. You can do that for 5%, 10% of the public don't have jobs. You can do welfare. I suppose you can support that. But what happens when 50% don't have jobs?
Culling the population.
I mean, it's dangerous times.
It's a very dangerous time.
You know, and we talked earlier on the program about the idea of gold confiscation and the dangers we're facing and whatever. You know, bear in mind that the name of this program is not financial tea and crumpets. It's financial survival. And it really is. Your survival, there are forces building right now where your survival and mine is no longer guaranteed. It can no longer be taken for granted. We may yet have a happy ending on all of this, but it is not abundantly clear that that's, you know, that that's what's really coming. That's what's headed our way. This program is named Financial Survival. It is intended to help you survive in the event that we see some real trouble, and we're inclined to think we're going to see some trouble. You know, it's hard to know how bad it's going to get, but it certainly could be. It could be horrendous. We'll watch and see. But financial survival, you understand? You may have to make some choices, and this is part and parcel to the problems we're having with the monetary system. Are part and parcel the same kind of problems we're seeing with robots? Part and parcel with the same kind of problems we're seeing with a Congress and a Senate and White House. The Bush administration, the Obama administration, they were encouraging illegal aliens to come into this country. This is what we have. This is what our Congress and our Senate and our White House has been prepared to do, betray our best interests. And what I'm saying is, we are living in a world where it's not unreasonable, it's not paranoid to actually start thinking about, well, what about my survival? What do you think do you think my survival could be threatened here, Melody? And if so, what should we do about that? You know, how should I properly prepare? First thing is, you just get your mind. You don't have to be paranoid, you don't have to run around in great fear and the rest of it, but it's not unreasonable to sit back and say, you know, it just might be a good idea to get an insurance policy that's outside the system, right? Not one that's on paper, not one that's signed by somebody who works for the government. Maybe we need a different kind of insurance policy. If you agree with that idea, one of the things you're going to think about is gold and silver. We're out of time. I want to thank all of you for listening. Melody and I will be back on Monday. We hope you will tune in at that time. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Todd, the producer. Bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.
In my dreams, I have a plan. If I got me a wealthy man.